Hello, doctor. I think we are lost. We went up there to the village. We have come back and we're right on the bridge. There is this junction. Yeah. Yes.
Hello, Dr. Chetri.
Welcome to the GNS Center.
Oh,
so lovely to see you. Yeah.
And here we are at the end of the road.
Yes, this is the end of the road.
Is that hard work?
Yeah, it's very hard. You need a lot of force, power in your, in the hammer and in your hands as well.
What do the workers think when you do that?
They feel very happy actually. In the beginning they wondered, you know, why would I at all work when they are there to work. And then they realize that it's not only for them that I'm helping for myself by being physically fit.
Oh, so you're actually enjoying the work yourself.
Enjoy the work. It's one of the most beautiful valleys in the country, known as Bumthang Valley. And I call this end of the road because we are actually at the end of the road. Beyond this, in 2 days walk, you would actually be on the border with Tibet, China. This place is full of life and energy, mainly because it has abundance of rainfall. And I think where there is enough water, there's a lot of life. This is a place of happiness for me, where I find so much relation with nature, with ecology. I feel a part of it. And I think the place itself is so serene.
So tell me about this project here.
This project actually is the first phase of our GNH Center. Actually, this part of the land is ours. And then we have 46 acres of land across the river, actually. This is a conference hall. We'll have a beautiful Bodhi tree roof. And then this is the meditation hall. It's a lot of space for meditators. And that's dining hall, kitchen, and a part of it as an office place. This is the only means of crossing the river at this point. Otherwise, we'll have to drive down 2 kilometers to cross the river. And this is a simple and effective and very cheap way of finding a solution.
Is this how you're going to carry people across when they come to the Happiness Center?
No. By then, we should have a road from other side or a breeze belt here.
So we're in a little basket now, and we're about to be pulled across. Let's go across.
Let's go across, yes.
Okay. Whoa.
Careful.
Coming to the middle of the river now. A huge river, sitting in a basket. Sandu's beaming, got a big smile on his face.
Yes. Yes, indeed. I mean, it's so refreshing to be in the waters. And it's alive. This water is alive.
And here we are. We've crossed to the other side safely. So you've got a map in front of you. Yeah. So I can see we're looking into the mountains, and there's the monastery on the mountain.
This is the northwest of the valley. So
I can see it is incredibly peaceful here. You can't even hear the river.
No. It's really a very lovely spot here. This valley is also the valley of spirituality.
Oh, look, here's the cave.
The monk who died 3 years ago meditated for 20 years.
Really?
Yes. It's a beautiful piece of stone, a slab that has just come down from the mountain and formed itself into a cave.
Will people meditate there?
Yes. And I want to not tell the people that there is a cave here. I want them to discover themselves. I wish I just need not do anything but just sit here and meditate. I would love that, you know. But, you know, it's also difficult to be looking after a center where you have to do a lot of planning, a lot of administrative work, and it irritates you a lot, you know. I was born in a cowshed, and I was so attached to animals, plants, insects, anything that had to do with nature. And my parents never thought about schooling. We had 7 brothers and 4 sisters. They were all working, and I thought I would be also one of the working persons there. But when I was 9 years old, my brother picked me up and brought me to a school.
And your father was very worried about you going to school, wasn't he?
He was very worried because I was a 9th child in the family. And somehow, I don't know why, I feel still today, I was the most loved child. And they didn't want me to leave the house. So my father was very worried, and worried that I will become very weak. So he sent a cow with me to school. And of course the cow couldn't stay long because it had to be fed and looked after, and people who were taking care of the cow didn't have time to do so. So he took back the cow, and he started visiting me with a lot of butter, cheese, milk for me.
When did you leave school?
I left school when I was just starting 14, because my brothers, sisters, everybody separated from home. And so I felt I needed to be home and to help my parents. And I started working in the farm. And I would wake up as usual at 4. And I had to walk about a kilometer to collect water. So I always brought fresh water for my parents so that they could have fresh water, tea in the morning. And then I would, feed ox, get into plowing into the field. At 10, my mom would be ready with food. I would come home, eat, and go with cattle again to the forest. Then when I was 16 years old, my parents wanted to go for pilgrimage to Nepal. So the car started, and after about 20, 30 minutes, it stopped. A group of people got into the bus. And from there we went, and we got a room in a guest house. And our room was large. And their family also got only one room, and there were 9 of them, and while we were 3 of us. So the men of that group came and asked my father, can you share your room because you have a large room? So my father said, no problem, you can take the corner of the room. From next day on, we became great friends. We visited temples and everything together. As we were walking to the temple, this man of the group came to me and said, why don't we walk ahead? The elderly people will follow us. So as we walked on, he asked me where I was from, how large was my family, what kind of property I had, wealth that we had, and things like that. And then we were sitting on the foot of the statue. With our closed eyes, we were praying. My mom was sitting on the left of my father, and I was sitting on the right of my father. And it seems that this man came back, took the holy water from the foot of this statue, and put it over my right hand and said, from today, I give my daughter in marriage to this young boy.
What did you think of that?
I don't know, because I didn't hear. My mother heard it. So in a little while, my father came to me and said, son, would you like to get married? I said, what are you talking about? I'm still so young. I'm studying, and you want me to get married? I was really angry with my father. And he said, you don't have to be angry. I just asked you, and if you don't want, just say no. So I said, no, 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 no,
Did you know the daughter?
No, she wasn't there, no idea, Next day, what this guy told me was, he said, look, in my village, my brother's daughter is getting married, and you are a Bhutanese, you don't know how Nepalis get married. Why don't you stay in my house? And I said, well, I'm not interested to see your marriage, but definitely... it is a nice invitation that you're giving me to come to your house, but why should we go to your house? Then I thought, why not, yeah? It's a nice offer, let's go. That day, the man took me to the town. Then they started measuring my finger. I said, what are you doing with my finger? He said, no, the boy who's going to get married to my brother's daughter is like you. Same thing happened with dressing. He said, you are exactly the same height, same, except he's a little bigger than you. So as a gift, I also made one pair for you, something like that. Then next day, the ceremony started, and the people gathered all around, and two ceremonial places were built. And I was wondering why. I had no idea. Then the other boy who was going to get married, he also had an empty chair on his side. And I also had an empty chair on my side. Then suddenly there are two men carrying two girls on their backs and coming towards us. One girl sit behind that boy. The other girl came and sat beside me. So I didn't know what was happening. I tried getting up and they pushed me down on the chair. Then my mom came to my rescue and said, "Sorry, son, everything has been, you have been duped."
Tell me, how did you feel?
I felt I was dead, you know. I wanted to die that moment.
You were their favorite son. You had done so much for them. You must have felt so angry with them.
I was not only angry, I was so hurt. I wanted to actually give my life. I couldn't do anything. And the whole ceremony began. There were people around. I couldn't do anything. We got married. Until then, I have not seen the girl. Scarf is down, so you can't see the face. Anyway, we got married. Then we were given a small hut to that girl and me to sleep. And of course, I didn't sleep. Then I wanted to jump into the well and die because this was something that I never expected my parents to do. So I was climbing up to jump into the well when he caught me from back and he broke into bitter crying.
Who is this?
The girl's father. And then he said, "Look, now if you die, whatever has happened has happened. Please don't blame your parents. It's me who has cheated everybody, told lies, played around, because I found that you would be a great husband for my daughter." Then I told him, "Look, but you have cheated me." He said, "Look, if you die now, you know what the repercussion that will happen on this little girl is, that she'll be widowed and nobody will marry her after that." So that was the point where I stopped thinking anything and I said, "Okay, this is my fate, I take it." And I felt so bad and I told her parents, I told, "Please, for God's sake, let her continue her studies. I'll come back to get her. Definitely, we're married now. Trust me." But they said, "No, we cannot keep her at home. Once a girl is married, she does not belong to us. We cannot keep her. You have to take her away."
You brought her back. Was it a very tense time with this girl, or did you immediately connect and make a bond with her?
No, I never connected immediately. It was very difficult for me. So I left for my school and continued my studies.
So she was living at home, but then something tragic happened to her.
I was in the college, in fact, in India. I got a letter from my father asking me to urgently return home, and I didn't know why. So when I came back home, I found out she was raped by a forest ranger. When I learned about this fact, I told her, "It's not your fault. Don't worry about this. What has happened, take it as a bad dream and forget about it."
So she felt ashamed.
She felt very ashamed, rather, very, very ashamed. And after I told her that, and I thought she would be well, I went back to my college. But just after 1.5 months of her delivery, she had left home. Nobody knew where she went.
So she just disappeared?
She just disappeared.
Did you go and look for her?
We tried. We tried looking for her. We asked her parents at home. She hadn't gone there. And wherever we thought she could have gone, we have tried looking for her.
Were you very sad?
Yes, indeed, because I had two young children. I mean, one was just 1.5 months old, and the other one was just about 3 years old, the daughter, and we had nobody, no mother to take care of her, them. And I said, and then I thought to myself, wow, if she is so much committed to give part of her life for me, why not ask her hand, you know? So I just asked her, "Do you want to marry me?" And she smiled and said, "Well, that's not my choice. You have to go and ask my parents my hand. If they agree, I would be happy to marry you."
So you married your second wife. You came home. And then a few years later, your first wife turned up.
She turned up and we didn't know what to do. And in 87, around October, in November, 1 month later, she has left the home.
She disappeared again.
She disappeared again. And when I realized that she had left, then we went back and again tried to find her. We never heard about her until recently. She is chained. Basically, she is mad. She's totally gone mad.
She's gone mad and she's chained in a room.
Chained in a room. I still feel, in fact, last night I was thinking about her, praying for her, you know, for her life, you know. And I was praying that maybe in another life we will be together, You know, so that thought came to me very deeply. For us, a king's wish is a command. The expectations of the royal family is not easy. You have to work very hard to meet their expectations. And I really had very little time for myself. Often I came back home around 2-3 in the morning and went back promptly at 8 to work. So it was very, very stressful time. And of course, you know, if you made a mistake, you get the punishment. One of those incidents, Highness Ajit Dikki called me saying, in Dzongkha she said, Samdung a teatha babe ondo me, pa lamka gudish. That means, Samdung, I'm coming with a stick, stand on the roadside. And of course, if I get scolding, I would cry because I always try to be, you know, very straightforward, you know, working as sincerely and loyally as I could. And if some blame came to me, I felt always hurt. So I cried often, often. Prime Minister called me. I went to report to him and he took me to an office and said, from today that is your table and that is a chair, you're going to sit here. And I reported to him saying, sir, but I don't know anything about government functioning. How can I help you? And he said, you don't need to bother. You sit here. I'll tell you what to do. The term happiness in GNH is basically we're trying to say that human beings must know nature, must be related to nature, must be a part of nature. How do you become to be that? Must be serving others, which means must have compassion, kindness in the person. Then the third thing is that the person must be helped to discover his or her own innate values. So we're not talking about this subjective happiness here. We're talking about kind of condition that a country can provide for the people, like psychological well-being, time use, how you use your time, community vitality, helping your community. Then you have health, education, living standards, sources of income for yourself so that you can look after your family, yourself.
So how do you actually judge what's going on? How do you know what's going on in, say, the next door village? How do you know whether or not their lifestyle meets your criteria for happiness?
Center for Bhutan Studies does once in every 2 years a survey to see where are we now. Very representative samples are taken from every village. In fact, not only every village, but it's every walk of life in a village is covered. Meaning if there's a monk, if there's a youth, if there's a farmer, you know, if there is a soldier, if there is a nun, you know, so all walks, housewives, they're all covered.
And then you look at what the country needs, what each of these villages need, yes. And then you try to provide that for them.
Exactly, exactly. For example, the research could, just an example, the name of this place is where we're sitting now, the village name is Nasafil. For example, the research could come out with a result that would say women between the age of 30 and 55 are unhappy. And then the reasons could be that they have very little education because they lose a lot of time collecting water from distant places. They have to collect firewood and they have no education, no time for themselves. So what does the country do immediately is bring non-formal education, pipe the water closer to them so that they have time. You know, they can collect within less time and they provide maybe efficient chulas for cooking so that they can save firewood for a longer duration.
I was sitting with some young people in Thimphu and I asked them, what makes you happy? Are you happy? And one of them said, a glass of beer makes me happy. And another said, I'm not happy. So do they really understand what you're trying to achieve, do you think?
They think a glass of beer makes me happy. But this is not what we want to bring, make them understand with happiness. And I can assure you, when these people will walk into our workshop, they will be understanding happiness and their tone will change the next day you ask the same question to them.
Personally, what do you think the secret of happiness is?
Few things are so important to be happy. One is we need to be content with whatever we have. We need to accept things as they are. And if we cannot do this, then we are not happy. Because the ego overtakes us, the greed overtakes us, the desires overtake us. It's simply understanding the true nature of our living. One truth is just loving everybody as they are.
I've been told that depression is on the rise in Bhutan, divorce is on the rise in Bhutan, so you have a big job ahead of you.
Very true, very true. There's a lot of depression coming our way. There's a lot of divorces happening, taking place, and it's our task, the GNH Center's task, to calm all this down. And we are very hopeful that and very confident that we can do it.